ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
ABQ Connect is presented by Bosky Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, Roofing, and Restoration. For service, call 444-7200. Bosky Heating and Cooling, locally grown, locally owned. Our friend Brian Cochran with John Moore Associates on the phone with us this afternoon, and today Brian's going to be with us the whole hour. Hi, Brian. How are you?
Things are good, sir. Great to be back with you.
You've been bringing us some nice updates in between our hour-long visits, and today we're going to talk about foundational principles to use for people returning to work. So the cash flow is starting to come in, and you've got some suggestions how we can manage that money.
That's right. I think a lot of people are still experiencing change and uncertainty, so some good foundational principles, I think, are the best way to address that uncertainty and get back to the things that you can control.
Well, and I know you always love to remind us that we should not be acquiring things with debt.
That's right. And what we see a lot of times is debt is used for things that are depreciating assets. So you are essentially paying later for something you're using today. And what we'd like people to do is use the money they have today and preserve it for things you might need later. So that's the difference between accumulating assets versus using debt. And we see people on the wrong side of that spectrum a lot. And sometimes that's because of circumstances outside of their control. For example, a pandemic hitting our country and losing your job for a short period. But to the extent that you can make wise decisions with your spending and your lifestyle and avoid that sort of debt, that's really the best way to go.
Brian, are there people that you think really have the keep up with the Joneses mentality, which is an old cliche where your next door neighbor goes and buys a car, so you have to go buy a car or you have to have a fancier house? Do you think that's prevalent in our culture?
Oh, absolutely. I think for a lot of people that drives a lot of their decisions. It might drive the job they get, where they live, both the city they live in and what community within that city. It could drive even the person they choose to marry, because they might choose somebody that's prepared to provide them with a good lifestyle. So I think it drives a lot of what we do, and sometimes it takes somebody else to see that in us because we don't always see that in ourselves. And that's one of the things that's so great about having some sort of financial accountability partner. Sometimes that's our spouse. Sometimes it's a good friend or someone like us serving as a professional advisor that says, hey, what's your motive here? Why are we going down this road? Is this about accumulation and greed and, as you said, keeping up with the Joneses? Or is this something that you believe you're following a path that God would want you to follow and one that's going to put you in a place, a better place long term?
Let me let our listeners know a little bit more about you, Brian. I do read kind of a little bit about your bio periodically, and I want to make sure everybody knows who you are. Brian is a certified financial planner with John Moore Associates. John Moore Associates really has, and I'll let you talk about your company in just a minute, but has some real Christian principles and Christian people that are involved in your organization. I think you'd probably agree, Brian, there's not a Christian way to invest, there's a Christian way to manage your money. Would you agree with that?
I think there's both. I mean, you can choose to, when you think about investing, usually you're buying something, so you can choose to place God's resources in a way that honors God versus a way that maybe doesn't. And so, for example, one of the ways we do that is when we buy individual stocks for clients, we do not invest in companies that might profit from things that we don't think honor God, things like alcohol, tobacco, abortion, pornography, or gambling. So we try to avoid things where we're making profits in ways that don't fit our beliefs and the beliefs of most of our clients.
Mm. Boy, I know you've probably said that before, but I never really thought about companies that provide all of those vices. And I'm sure that some of them are quite profitable. And you guys really have a conscience about, you know, how you're making money for people. To let people know, Brian's actually received quite a few awards. Forbes named Brian the number one advisor in New Mexico in 2018. He was the number one millennial advisor in New Mexico, and number three overall advisor in 2017. He's also on the board of the New Mexico Christian Foundation, and he serves as chairman of the board of True North Financial Ministries. So in addition to being a dad and a husband, you've got about 100 other things on your plate, Brian.
Yeah, and it's really a privilege to serve on those boards because those are two wonderful nonprofits that really have a good impact on people, and they fit into the world I live in professionally around finance, but they're really trying to care for people. The National Christian Foundation and the New Mexico Christian Foundation is really designed to encourage people to be generous and provide them tools to maximize their generosity. And then True North is actually in a really great position right now. We provide some technology tools and coaching resources to help people make better financial decisions. And that's one of the things we're really excited about now is we've been using our resources in that area to help design a mobile application, an app for your phone, that is partnering with MoneyWise. So the radio program that KNKT broadcasts has now developed an app that you can use to help track your finances and make wise decisions.
And of course, that's heard every day, Monday through Friday, 11:30 at KNKT. You have Compass Ministries. You know, they have a, you know, Rob West really gives great advice on the phone. And Brian, when we were talking a little bit before the program, I told you that I hadn't gotten any advanced questions about today's show, and I've already had an email come in since we've been on the phone with you this afternoon. And this is a question that you've answered before. I hope you don't mind interrupting our flow here, but I want to ask it so that this listener can get, you know, get reinforced a little bit. And it's a very common question. You've addressed this each week, literally, for the past 4 or 5 weeks. And the question is this: how can the financial markets continue to be positive in this political environment and this environment of social unrest in our country?
Yep. So the key thing to look at when you talk about markets is what drives stock markets higher or lower is the projection for corporate earnings. So think of corporate profitability. And so what's driving the market higher is that we're seeing good economic data, data that's not great. I mean, we're coming out of this economic doldrum and this recession that we just left, but it's better than was expected. And we're seeing increased projections of profitability for large corporations. So that's what's driving the market higher. Is when we look into 2021, the projections that we see every week in our investment analysis shows that corporations are raising their profit expectations for next year. So I know that doesn't make the headlines in the news, but that's what's happening underneath, and that's what the major investors, the institutions that really drive stock prices, that's what they're looking at. And I want to take this moment to point out, so we just had a wonderful webinar with our favorite economist. His name is Fritz Meyer. He comes out of Denver, Colorado. And we recorded that, and we're hoping to have that up on our Insights page either today or Monday. So for that listener or anybody else, if you go to johnmoore.com/insights, Fritz provided about a 45 or 50 minute long presentation, and he very specifically addressed just that question. So if you want a little deeper answer on that, that's free content. Just jump on our website, johnmoore.com, click on the Insights tab, and look for that that recording again later today or Monday. We should have that live.
Yeah, that's, I love your website. I mean, the insights are very timely, and there's a lot of information that's available there. And again, as you mentioned, it is free. Brian Cochran on the phone with us this afternoon. He is a financial planner, certified financial planner with John Moore Associates. Brian, let's get back to the foundational principles to use for people returning to work. You've given me three. Let's go over those.
Yeah, so there's a few things we're looking at, and what I'm really thinking about here is those folks that maybe were really dependent on unemployment income for the last few months, or maybe they were underemployed, if not fully unemployed, and now they're getting back. And to me, the three things to look at, and they're all quite connected really, is to start thinking more about monitoring your expenses first. And I just mentioned the MoneyWise app, which is a good tool where you can basically connect your bank accounts and track where your money's going. But even if you just do it with a notepad and paper or your own spreadsheet, know where your money's going. And I think in times of abundance, when things are good, we tend to lose track of where our spending is really going, and that can put us into some trouble. The second is to be very smart about your debt. So So maybe you have accumulated some debt during this period because you haven't had all of your income, and it's put you a little bit behind. So really being smart about debt and diligently reducing your debt, that's one of the best things. A lot of people complain right now about the high level of uncertainty. Well, focus on the things you can control. If you know where your expenses are going, where your money's going, and you're minimizing your debt and reducing the debts you have, those are two things that are generally well within our control, and we can focus on those. And then the third is to start building an emergency reserve as you are able. So if your debts are under control, maybe you're balancing by paying down your debts while also trying to save a little bit every month for the next lean period that we might have. So if you do lose your job again, or if you do go through some unexpected expenses, that you have that. I'm always amazed how I've met people over the years who have sometimes very good incomes, $100,000, $200,000 a year for family income, and they have no emergency reserve because they spend everything that comes in. So it takes patience and diligence to build an emergency reserve, but it really helps you get through some of these up and down uncertain times.
Brian, I can testify for many, many years I did commercial lending, commercial real estate finance, and I would look at the financial statements of people that were doctors, lawyers, very high income people, $200,000 to $500,000 a year. And I'm just going to take a guess at this, so don't hold me to it, but I would say easily over 70% of the people that I looked at, if they made $200,000, they spent $201,000. If they made $300,000, they spent more money than they brought in. It was like everybody was highly leveraged. And I thought that was odd. I would always perceive myself, oh yeah, if I made that much money, I'd be spending half of it. But human nature, makes it a lot harder to do than it does to say, doesn't it?
It does. And some people judge those who might earn a lot of income and say that's not very Christian of them to be so, you know, greedy to earn so much. But the actual biblical principles around money, there's never anything that says you shouldn't go out and earn a good living. It's really the principles and God's view on it is, what do you do with the money you earn? So what's your motive? Are you earning more so you can have a bigger house, a nicer car? I heard someone say that, you know, people increase their income so they can get closer to the coast and buy a faster car. Well, you know, is that your motive, or are you trying to increase your giving and make a better impact on your community? So sometimes we call that increasing your standard of giving rather than your standard of living. So you really have to be very cognizant of where your money's going. So that's why I think these principles we just shared are so important, because if you're really paying attention to where your spending's going, then what it gives you the ability to do is look down at your numbers, take a step back, either on your own with an accountability partner, with your spouse, and say, wow, does this spending really reflect my values and my goals, or if I let this get away from me?
Great insight. Brian Cochran, he is a certified financial planner with John Moore Associates. More from Brian. He's going to be with us the whole hour. And if you'd like to give us a call and ask a question of Brian, feel free to do so at 505-338-5790. Now, Brian's on the phone with us, so we are limited a little bit technology-wise. If you call in and then we have somebody on the phone talking to Brian, you may have to wait a few minutes on the phone for us to get you on the air. But we'd love to have you on the air. So please consider calling us at 505-338-5790. More with Brian Cochran right after these messages.
Quality, experience, personal service. Dom Garcia Realty, placing the interest of others first.
So we weren't ready to sell our home, but we did need to move. So we needed to find a realtor who also did property management. One of the things that was important to us, to my husband and I, is that we started putting our money where our mouth was in hiring someone who is a believer, hiring someone who is a Christian. It was maybe a week, that he came over to our house, toured it, and got the contract signed. I would say overall, Dom was efficient. He was available, quick, easy. I didn't have to worry about a thing.
We are a full-service broker that includes working with buyers and sellers, renting, leasing, management, whether residential or commercial.
Dom Garcia Realty, 899-4644,
899-4644. Se habla español.
Hi, this is John Chitwood with Southern Boulevard Automotive. You have heard a word a lot here of late, and that word is essential. Here at Southern Boulevard Automotive, our master certified technicians understand that your car, truck, or SUV is essential to getting you from point A to point B. We are open for business. Our hours are 7 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. And don't forget that we have free towing with repairs. Just call for details. Our phone number is 892-2300. That's 892-2300. We are located on the corner of Southern and Western Hills across from McDonald's in Rio Rancho. And I'm here to tell you that the most essential thing in this life is the cross of Jesus. There is absolutely nothing more important to you and I. God saw you as essential and gave his only begotten Son that you would believe in him and have eternal life. Never minimize the cross. It's the centerpiece of the gospel, and never forget the hope you and I have in the empty tomb. I'm John Chitwood with Southern Boulevard Automotive.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We are back with Brian Cochran, John Moore Associates, certified financial planner, on the phone with us. So we're properly socially distancing a few miles, right?
That's right.
Brian, I want to talk a little bit about inflation, and a lot of people are predicting that, I guess, with, you know, the multi-trillion dollar bailouts that have been put out there and things that the government is doing to try to stimulate the economy, they're anticipating that we are going to have inflation. Do you expect that as well?
I think it's reasonable to expect some level of inflation, but I think some people are acting as if we're going to have doomsday massive inflation. And right now, certainly there's no signs that that's happening today. So I think it's important to understand what makes inflation happen. It's basically when there's, it's a supply and demand factor, really. It's when there's more cash chasing less goods. So then there's more money in the system and less goods to use it against that. So why we have more cash now is, like you said, there was all this stimulus. And where this is very different than in 2008, 2009, the stimulus that happened then was really all happening through the Federal Reserve. And a lot of the money that the Federal Reserve moved into the system simply went to bank balance sheets. So they really recapitalized the banks, restored the banks. That money didn't flow out to the consumer. So that money didn't land in our checking and savings accounts and then go into spending. It really was kind of behind the scenes. So where this period is different is we have seen a rapid increase in the money in our checking accounts because of that extra $600 a week of unemployment plus the $1,200 per person lump sum. And I'm not saying those were a bad thing to do, but one of the side effects of that could be an increase in inflation, because all that money hit our bank accounts in a very quick manner, and it was designed to stimulate the economy and replace lost income and all that, which is, again, good in theory, but now it's got to work its way through the system. And the other thing that's happened at the same time is the COVID shutdown has created less supply of goods. So, for example, we have a client who works in an RV dealership, and they're selling RVs like crazy because people aren't going on traditional vacations through airlines and hotels and things like that. So they're buying RVs. Well, RV production slowed down because of the COVID shutdown, so you have less RVs but more demand, and eventually that will increase prices, and that's how you get inflation, is that mismatch between supply and demand. So with all that said, yes, it's reasonable to expect inflation. Some people are acting as if we're, you know, very soon going to see maybe double-digit inflation or 7 or 8% inflation. We don't see signs of that yet. It's not impossible, but we're not seeing it today.
I have a friend of mine that just refinanced his house. He had about a 5.5% interest rate, and he just refinanced on a 15-year loan at 3%. And saved him a little money. His payment on a 15-year now is actually the same as it was on a 30-year loan. And so he saved a bunch of money there. But I fear that the perspectives people have, I can't imagine mortgage interest rates staying in the 3% range. They've got to go up to the fives or the sixes. And I can tell you, when I first bought a house, we were happy with 7.5%.
Yeah. Yeah, and we've been in this very low inflation period for a while now. So since the economic recovery sort of started back in 2009, 2010, we've only averaged about 1.5% inflation since then, based on the indicator that the Federal Reserve likes to use, which is called a PCED. And, you know, the target for the Fed is to see 2% inflation. So we've been averaging 25% lower than anticipated inflation. And so we may see some upticks there. So we might have more inflation than we've had in the past, but that doesn't necessarily mean problematic inflation. Again, time will tell. So I think one of the things that we talked about is principles. If you do anticipate inflation, I think, you know, the question becomes what do you do then? How do you change your behaviors? What financial decisions do you make? And one of them is just what you just mentioned with your friend. Higher inflation usually results in higher interest rates. That's interest rates on your savings. The Fed funds rate drives your savings rate. Higher interest rates on bonds and higher bond rates equal higher mortgage rates. So someone like your friend, I think, is wise. If they do anticipate higher inflation, then getting a fixed rate mortgage today could be wise. So oftentimes you can get a better rate if you buy a variable mortgage or a variable interest rate of any kind of debt. You get a better rate today. But if you are concerned about inflation, then making sure you're aware of which debts you have currently that are variable, that's important. And then any new debt you take on, make it fixed. Now, that's not a specific recommendation. Everybody's needs are different, but that's a concept to consider as you look at your debt. So common variable interest rates, right, you know, for the average, you know, family could be your credit cards. That's a biggie. You definitely don't want to have a big credit card balance if interest rates start to rise because you're already paying a high rate, and that rate will only go up. Another common variable rate we might see is an adjustable rate mortgage that could adjust in, you know, 5 or 7 or 10 years. And also home equity lines of credit sometimes are variable. So those are some things to look at and understand, okay, if right now rates are very, very low, if they go higher, where am I vulnerable? So that's one way to look at inflation is to look at your debt.
And, Brian, I'm reminded as you're talking about these low mortgage rates, we have had a caller call in the past when you were on the show with us asking about whether it would be beneficial to try to get a cash out refinance, break some cash loose equity that you have in your home because the markets are doing so well. So you borrow money to invest in the markets. And I think you did not recommend doing that.
Yeah, it's not that that's guaranteed not to work. It's just anytime you leverage like that and you use debt to buy other assets, you're taking on an increased level of risk. And so it's generally an approach we don't recommend because it takes a lot of risk. Because if those investments don't play out, you still have to make those debt payments. And now you're basically losing money that you don't have. You know, it's borrowed money. So you have to go back and pay that back. So you're really presuming on the future if you do that. And investing always presumes on the future at some level, but you really crank up the level of risk when you make that investment using debt.
Brian, what investments have historically performed well during periods of higher inflation?
Yeah, there's a few, and I always have to put that disclaimer out. I'm not recommending any specific investments. We're just talking about concepts here today and, you know, consult with a professional with your situation before you make any investments. But gold is traditionally considered an inflation hedge investment. Specifically, gold does well when currencies are devalued. So one thing people worry about with more dollars out in the system is each dollar maybe becomes worth a little bit less. And so gold has performed quite well this year in response to the stimulus that we've seen. Another one that people forget about, and I think because inflation's been so low, people have forgotten about an investment called TIPS. TIPS are Treasury Inflation Protected Securities. So they're bonds issued by the U.S. Treasury, which is still considered a very good, high-quality bond. And they adjust higher, both in interest rate and value, if inflation increases. So if you buy TIPS today and inflation rises, then your bond will increase in value. So it's a conservative way. So I think a lot of people consider gold to be a preservation or safety asset, but gold actually has about triple the price volatility as a TIP. So people are looking at different ways. I fear a lot of times gold is sold as this safety asset, but gold has sometimes extremely high volatility, and there's no guarantee it's going to be worth more tomorrow. So I'd be very careful if you're going into the gold market. People see the past performance over the last year particularly, but what people forget is gold peaked out, I think it's 2011 or 2012 when it peaked, at about $1,900 an ounce, a little bit more. And it did not exceed that $1,900 an ounce until about a month ago. So you went through a 8-year period, 9-year period where you didn't make any money on your gold. And gold does not produce a dividend or interest payment like bonds or stocks might. So you're not getting anything along the way. You're just holding an asset that may have dropped since you purchased it, and you're waiting for it to recover. So there's definitely some trade-offs with each of these, but my biggest thing that really kind of irks me is the way gold is presented as a safety asset, quote-unquote, when really it's quite volatile.
Yeah. Are there any other precious metals? I mean, I guess I would just think, as you're mentioning gold, I mean, does silver follow the same line? I guess you can invest in platinum and maybe even mention other commodities that might be available.
Yeah. Commodities in general. I mentioned gold, but some people might choose silver or other commodities. So commodity prices can rise very quickly in times of inflation. So this could be more industrial type commodities, metals like copper, aluminum, things like that. Again, they all come with their own risks, and you really need to be careful as you enter these. And oftentimes people trade commodities through futures with debt, so there's a whole other risk there. But my biggest concern is people are looking at things like gold, and they're looking more at the last 6 to 12 months and making their decision. What I always tell people is, if you're so convinced of inflation, would you still buy gold or whatever the asset you're looking at if it had been negative over the last year? Would you still feel the same? Or are you really just chasing that last performance? Because I think a lot of people get caught up in what it's done in the last 6 to 12 months. They want to get in on that. But oftentimes those assets that have performed the best over the next year or the last year don't always perform the best over the next year. So you have to be very careful with performance chasing when you do this. And I always consider people to look at long-term investments rather than short-term speculative trades. So if you're going to get into gold, you know, are you getting into it now because you want to own it for 20 years, or because you think inflation is going to be higher in the next 2 years and you're going to get in and out of that trade very quickly? That's a very difficult way to successfully and consistently produce returns.
Brian, you have talked to us about oil in the past, and you talked to us a little bit about the conflict between OPEC and oil being produced out of Russia, and how the market was driven down and all kinds of factors really harmed the economy in southeast New Mexico, because at one point we were at $60+ a barrel, and then it went all the way down to negative numbers. Is investing in oil something that people should be looking at?
Oil is a little bit different in that way. It could respond to inflation potentially, but it has its own supply-demand factors. So the reason oil plummeted was because of some of those international concerns you mentioned, but also because demand plummeted. So you had 900 rigs out there in the U.S., you know, pushing oil. And then all of a sudden you've got all this production and no demand because everything came to a halt around the world. So oil is very much stabilized now in the kind of low $40 range. And the rig count has dropped very quickly, so there's not as much production online, so that should help stabilize the price. My point in saying all that is it has its own supply-demand, whereas especially gold, yeah, there's supply-demand, but it's not based on any sort of, it's not so much based on usage or economic growth. It's based purely on what people think is going to happen in the future. So sometimes people call it a fear investment because it's, if gold goes up, it's because people are scared something's going to happen. It's not because they need more gold for something. It's simply a store of value that they're racing toward.
Mm. Brian, we have Liz on the phone, and she has a question for you this afternoon. Hi, Liz.
Hi there. How are you all doing?
Good. Thank you for calling. You have a question for Brian?
Yes, I do.
Go ahead.
Hi, Brian. My question is I'm a landlord. I have two separate properties, and I've got an LLC. My question is if in case there's a lawsuit, like say someone should get hurt on one of the properties, does an LLC protect you from lawsuit, or is it just what you have under the LLC?
Yeah, good question. And first off, you're wise to do that. We see a lot of people invest in residential or commercial real estate, and they're just doing it directly. They're the owner of the asset. So the LLC can provide some protection, and I have to be careful here, Liz, because I like to say my errors and omissions insurance doesn't cover legal advice. So I'm going to be a little vague here, and I apologize for that. But from my understanding, when you have an LLC or other corporate structure, you just need to make sure that all your ducks are in a row as far as proper documentation and governance, because if there's holes there, it could expose that LLC to be invalid as far as the liability protection you're looking for. The other thing I've seen in some cases, I've seen some attorneys recommend that each property have its own LLC so that you don't put two properties at risk if there's an accident on one. So we've seen that before where you might have four, five, six properties and each one really has its own corporate entity so that it can isolate its risk. But those are really good questions to bring to a specialist in that area, an attorney who can give you your specifics and provide specific guidelines on your LLC administration to make sure you're not leaving yourself vulnerable.
And Liz, I want to point out here that Brian actually collaborates very often with tax advisors, attorneys, and insurance professionals based on your individual needs. Isn't that right, Brian?
That's right. So we know the types of attorneys that you can talk to for these things, but yeah, there's definitely a huge risk management component there. You're already ahead of the game by having an LLC at all. It's just a matter of making sure that you're doing everything you need with that structure to keep that protection in place. The other thing we always recommend if someone has investment properties is to consider a high-level umbrella policy. So you should have liability insurance on your properties through your normal homeowner's protection, but also having your own personal liability umbrella. Sometimes those get limited down to $1 or $2 million in coverage. So depending on your other resources, you might need to get that a little bit higher. But I've had residential real estate in the past, and that was the first thing I did is I went out and got myself a little extra umbrella policy just to feel better. And I've seen a $2 million umbrella policy cost less than $30 a month. So it's not a big investment to have a lot of protection in place in case someone does come after you and want to sue you for some reason.
Liz, does that answer your question?
It sure does. Thank you so much for your time, Brian. I appreciate it.
Appreciate your
My
call
pleasure.
Today.
Have a good day, Liz.
Yeah.
You too.
We're going to be back with more from Brian Cochran. He is a certified financial planner with John Moore Associates, frequent contributor to ABQ Connect. More with Brian. Going to talk about assets that have traditionally done poorly during periods of higher inflation. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
New Mexico, we love it, but it's no secret our state is left behind in some very vital social issues. Child hunger, single parents, and abortion, to name a few. The people of God can and must take action. That's what Mission New Mexico is all about at KNKT and Star 88, this month featuring the CareNet Pregnancy Centers of Albuquerque. Here's their executive director, Stephanie Liu.
We do share Christ with our clients. We let them know their value, and if they don't know their value, they're not going to value that little life inside of them.
That's Stephanie Luke from the CareNet Pregnancy Centers of Albuquerque, this month's Mission New Mexico. Loving our neighbors in practical and productive ways is Christianity 101. At KNKT and Star 88, we are a megaphone for New Mexico needs as we provide a clear call to action. Find out more about supporting the CareNet Pregnancy Centers of Albuquerque by clicking the Mission New Mexico link at knkt.com or star88.fm.
Hi, and we're back with today's MoneyWise Minute with Rob West.
It's always good to know whether we're growing spiritually, and putting the needs of others first is a good measuring stick. First, look at your humility. Christ always assumed the lowliest position. He washed feet. He served others. He is our example. Next, self-denial. Be willing to say no to yourself, even if you deserve it, so that someone else or something else can take first place. Finally, how do you show love for others? The Bible says, consider others as more important than yourselves. Love your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus says, to the extent you've shown love to others, you've shown love to me. All of these qualities can impact your finances, so be prepared and ask God to help you when you have the opportunity to serve Him.
KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Brian Cochran, John Moore Associates on the phone with us. Brian, I just love the way you handled Liz's question there. Very succinct, and I'm just blessed by you spending the time with us. So thank you, and if you want to give Brian a call while he's on the show with us, please call us at 505-338-5790. Brian, talk to us a little bit about investments that have traditionally done poorly during times of inflation.
Yeah, so we talked about historically during times of inflation, it's a good time to own TIPS, which are Treasury inflation-protected securities, and also your commodities, maybe even precious metals. some things you might want to be careful about is how many long-term bonds you own. So I'm being very specific there about long-term bonds. And the way that works is a bond is really a loan, and it's a loan that often comes with a fixed rate. There are variable interest bonds as well. But what we see sometimes is people buy longer-term bonds because the yield is higher, typically, the longer you go. So as interest rates have come down, if people want to keep their yield high, rather than buy a bond that might mature in 5 or 10 years, they buy a bond that might mature in 20 or 30 years. And the risk you take in that, if inflation appears, is that often inflation comes with higher interest rates. So if you own a bond today, for example, a 10-year bond today is going to yield you somewhere around 0.6, 0.7%. That's it. So if interest rates go up, you leave yourself vulnerable because if, let's say, new bonds are issued in a couple of years when inflation has come in and rates are higher, and you're sitting on a bond that's only paying you 0.6 or 0.7%, and new bonds get issued, let's say, at even 2 or 3%, or if inflation's very high, maybe it goes up to 4 or 5 or 6%. How attractive is your bond? I mean, Jim, would you want to buy a bond from me if it was a 0.6% bond and you could go out and buy a new bond at 6 or 7%?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, so what happens is that bond you own becomes less valuable. The market will reprice that bond because you'll have to basically plummet the price of that bond to make it attractive on the market. And so that's the risk you take. And the way it works is there's an inverse relationship between the interest rate of the market and prices in bonds. So if interest rates go up, bond prices go down. And the longer term your bond, the more volatile those price movements are. So if you are concerned about inflation, one thing you might do is understand the bonds you own. And know if they're going to mature in a year or two, you're probably not taking on a whole lot of interest rate risk or inflation risk. But if your bonds are bonds that mature in 15, 20, or 30 years, they've probably already performed pretty well this year because interest rates have gone down, which means your bond prices went up. But if that changes course because inflation becomes a concern and those interest rates start to rise, you could be susceptible to a lot of risk. And a lot of people say, well, aren't bonds safe? Well, they can be, but you have to be aware of the special risk that you have in each investment. And especially in long-term bonds, the risk you take is that rates go higher and you're stuck with a bond that is no longer desirable on the market.
Mm. Brian, I earlier in the program asked you about people increasing their personal debt by trying to keep up with the Joneses, mm-hmm. you know, buying the car, buying the house, buying whatever it is their neighbor has. I'm going to shift gears, but it's along the same concept, and I want you to talk to us a little bit about the principles of giving, but kind of in a negative perspective, do people try to keep up with the Joneses the way they give?
They can, especially in areas where giving comes with recognition. So I certainly don't want to deter anybody from giving to a university or an endowment, but oftentimes people give a large gift to a college or some kind of organization, and they are rewarded with their name on a plaque or on a brick or something like that. And that in itself is not necessarily a bad thing, but it makes you wonder your motive. So are you giving? It's just like how with prayer, we're not supposed to pray to be noticed praying, right? We're not supposed to be bragging about our faith through our prayer. But same thing with giving. There's specific scripture that warns about getting your recognition now because then you won't get your recognition later in eternity. And so, you know, what we've seen is most of the clients we work with and we have the joy of serving, you know, a lot of them give anonymously. So when you're giving anonymously, it's really hard to question the motive because they're not really getting anything except for the joy of giving and maybe a tax deduction, which no one's going to complain about. But it's really not about any ulterior motive about keeping up with the Joneses or being seen as a giver.
And really my point is, and I'd like to read Proverbs 19:17. It says, "One who is gracious to a poor man lends to the Lord, and he, that is the Lord, will repay him for his good deed." But the motive here from the scripture is not to be repaid. It's that God's going to bless you when you give generously to people that are in need. And we are just in a crazy time where people are really in need.
Yep, and I just became aware of a survey that came out. Our friends at National Christian Foundation shared this. And I can't remember how many givers they interviewed, but they found that 85% of these givers we're going to give as much or more in the next year despite all the uncertainty and despite the fact that many of them might be, might have a lower net worth or lower income than they had, you know, 9 months ago. So I think Christians as a whole are leading by example by stepping up and continuing to give or even giving more in response to that need that you're talking about and this high level of uncertainty that we feel.
Brian, do you have any apprehension as you look at everything now has gone to technology? In fact, if you talk with Pastor Skip Heitzig at Calvary Church, he'll tell you mm-hmm. that the people that have been exposed to the teaching he presents every Wednesday and every weekend, Saturday nights and Sunday mornings, the number of people participating has increased exponentially because they're taking part in all areas of the world, all over the world. People are doing the same thing. I know I talk with the people from Legacy Church. They told me the same thing. They have people all across the planet literally watching their services and giving, mm-hmm. giving to the churches seems to be pretty steady. Now, I get nervous about making those kind of statements because a lot of times culturally we think, oh, well, if giving's not going down, they don't need my money. But you really want, and one of the principles you teach and share with people is a principle of being generous.
Yep. And generosity is really more about mindset and attitude and the motivation more than it is about the dollars. So if I make $2 million a year and I give $50,000 a year, I might think I'm generous. But if my attitude is that I give regretfully because I feel like I have to, or if I'm giving because I feel obligated at church and or I'm giving because of the recognition I receive, that's not generosity, because God wants us to give in response to the gift of salvation, in response to the way God has provided for us in our lives. And so, you know, the way we think of it and the way we teach it to our clients and the way I've been taught through our training with Kingdom Advisors is that, you know, someone who's giving, you know, 15% of a very low income is certainly being more generous than someone who's giving 1% of a very high income, even if the dollars favor that high income but low percentage giver. And so, you know, it's a really challenging thing because money's a heart issue and we wrestle with these things, the ownership of the money, who really owns it? Is it mine? Is it God's? Who deserves the recognition for what has been given to me? Is it because I earned it and I'm special, or is it because God is blessing me? So that attitude is really what makes someone generous more than just the act of giving or the amount they give.
Mm. Well, in that survey that you mentioned, the donors that were surveyed, it says, and I'm reading it right here, it says most of the donors are optimistic about the economic recovery staying pretty consistent.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of, you know, we had the person write in earlier in this hour who said, how the heck is the market doing so well when everything on the news is so bad? I think there, you know, people who are really paying attention to the numbers and some of the factors see that maybe things aren't as bad as we expected they would be at this point, and that things might be getting better faster than we anticipated. So there is some optimism out there. So, and I think that makes it easier to give, but the real challenge of generosity and the challenge of giving out of gratitude is to sometimes give even when there's no certainty that you're going to have more for yourself later. And to really trust in God to provide for you while you give assets that are entrusted to you for other people's needs. Mm. So it's a tough wrestling thing that I think is meant to be an ongoing struggle. And money and the provision that we have in our lives, it's just meant to be there as an ongoing reminder of, okay, you have a God who loves you and he's generous. Now how are you going to respond? And show me that with how you're managing the assets that you've been entrusted.
I've received another email question. People are emailing me at jim@abqconnect.online. You may also call the station at 505-338-5790. Our most friendly Steve Ryman will answer the phone for you. And Steve's going to bring us back for one last segment with Brian Cochran. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Adam Holtz, and you're listening to Plugged In.
Some people just hear voices.
Good morning.
But I see mine.
In the movie Words on Bathroom Walls, now streaming online, we meet Adam, an adolescent with schizophrenia. Various personalities inhabit his brain, including one that speaks dark things. When Adam injures another student, his mom enrolls him in a Catholic school. Adam develops a friendship with a caring priest there, as well as a romance with a student named Maya. Words on Bathroom Walls paints a sympathetic portrait of someone suffering from schizophrenia. Rough edges include profanity, innuendo, and some tense moments. But the film also says mental illness shouldn't define someone's identity. So we're giving it a 3 out of 5 for family friendliness. Read the full review at PluggedIn.com/radio. I'm Adam Holtz for Focus on the Family's Plugged In Movie Review.
Radical Democrats in New Mexico have allowed abortion clinics to operate with no major restrictions. No waiting periods, no parental involvement, no limits on publicly funded abortions. HB 51 was dubbed one of the most extreme abortion bills in the nation, granting up-to-birth abortions in the state. Democrats in the legislature have blocked all restrictions on late-term abortions. The right to life is something that we must cherish and fight for. If not us, then who will speak for the unborn? Joe Biden is looking at our broken system as a perfect model for the rest of the country, and it's time for us to fight back. We must send a message to Joe Biden that infanticide and procedures that kill babies must come to an end in New Mexico. The corruption, out-of-state money, and disregard for precious human life end with this election. A vote for President Trump is a vote to dismantle this brutal system and defend life at all stages in New Mexico.
I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Donald J. Trump for President Inc.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Brian Cochran told us in our first segment today, he said we should consider raising our standard of giving rather than our standard of living. And boy, I think that's a really appropriate during this time of COVID-19.
Yep, definitely plenty of opportunities to be generous here and plenty of people in need.
Brian, I know that John Moore Associates gives opportunities for charitable organizations to make presentations and things sometimes, and I don't want to ask you for a specific recommendation about any one charity or so forth, but do you all have some kind of criteria that you use to kind of evaluate charitable organizations and let people know about them?
Yeah, and it's one of the most difficult things we do every year is we invite these charities to speak, and inviting them is not the hard part, but choosing the charity is hard because there are many worthy organizations. So we always start off by looking for something local where the impact will be very local, you know, the organizations that are employing people locally to fulfill their mission and who are impacting people in the communities where we serve. So for us, that means oftentimes we're looking at organizations in New Mexico or in Albuquerque specifically, but also we have an office in Arizona, so we look for some wonderful organizations there. We look for organizations that reflect our values, so we look for faith-based organizations who are not just serving people's needs, but also trying to really be part of kingdom purposes. So they're local, they share our values. And then we look for organizations in particular that maybe don't get a lot of state or federal government aid, organizations that really depend on local donors and local volunteers to fulfill their missions. And part of the reason we do that is not just so that they're getting the resources, but we often share these charities with our clients, and sometimes our clients take what they learn and they become engaged with those charities as volunteers. So it gives people an opportunity not just to give, but also to serve locally in their community.
I want to go back to the survey, which you were kind enough to send to me, and I'm now reading here on page 5, and it says, donors more likely to increase than decrease giving in the wake of COVID-19. And I have to say personally that I'm really blessed by that, but I'm also surprised because I hear people seem to be getting COVID-19 fatigue, but people that really have generous hearts are not only continuing, but they're persevering and really stepping up.
Yeah, and in the families we serve, we've certainly seen that. We have some people who give very consistently that have upped their game. Sometimes people are giving more right now because they can't spend other things. So we've had a lot of clients who've canceled trips that might be a few thousand dollars or tens of thousands of dollars, so vacations they thought they would take. And so with the resources they're getting back on those refunds, they're looking around and going, you know, I can't go anywhere. I can't do anything. I know there's needs in my community. I'm going to step up and turn this money right back around and give it away to a charity that I believe in. So we're seeing a lot of that behavior as well. I think that helps. The other thing that's happened is the rapid rebound in the market has helped with our clients, because we really encourage what we call asset-based giving, where we don't just write checks to charities, but we give assets, particularly the stocks that we manage in client accounts. So a couple weeks ago, for example, we were going to trim or pull back a position in one of our stock strategies that we manage. And when we do that, we have a list of donors that we reach out to first. And because the stock had appreciated so much, if those donors were to sell some of that stock as we intended, they would face a tax consequence, a capital gain. So rather than to sell that stock and take the gain, we offer them the opportunity and we say, hey, we're about to sell this. What do you think about making a gift instead? And we had, in I think 3 days, we gave away $300,000 of that stock to different charities. So we see people stepping up because they have the resources. Some people really have an abundance right now, despite all the changes we've experienced. They see the need, and they see, like you mentioned before, some optimism about the economy. So all that is feeding this increase in giving that we've experienced with our clients.
Well, I don't want this to sound selfish about Albuquerque, because we really appreciate all our listeners in Santa Fe and in Belen and the entire region of central New Mexico, and that includes all the way south in Valencia County and up in as you go north in Sandoval County. So we really appreciate all our listeners. I just want to use Albuquerque as an example because I live here and I've talked to a lot of people about this, Brian. We have charitable organizations like Feed New Mexico Kids and New Mexico mm-hmm. Dream Center. And these are New Mexico Dream Center works with kids that are involved in child domestic sex trafficking, which is, I never even knew that existed. And it's just a unbelievable, could be involving as many as 2,000 or 3,000 youth in our city. And then you've got 4,000 or 5,000 kids in APS that are food insecure and they don't have food on the weekends. And Feed New Mexico Kids is taking care of about 50% of those. Great partnerships with APS and other school districts doing this. I know several churches are involved, including Legacy and Calvary and others. And I think about the dollars that people could give and just eliminate child hunger in our city. I think that's really within our reach, because I just don't think there's that many people that we could not afford to take care of all these folks. So giving really has a major impact no matter how much you give, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, and we've seen studies in the past that show that we could easily fulfill the Great Commission and get scripture to everybody in the world and all people and all languages with even just a couple percent increase in giving amongst Christians alone. And we could also solve a lot of those issues you're talking about, of food insecurity and people having a lack of quality shelter and clothing. I mean, the money is there. It's so frustrating when people talk about it, as if only we had the resources we could fix these problems, but that's not the case at all. The resources are there, even in a community like Albuquerque that doesn't seem to have a lot of wealth compared to others. So I think for charity sometimes that can be the frustration, as they know the resources are there. But it's what you mentioned before. We are all facing this battle between being generous and giving to organizations versus spending on ourselves to have a better lifestyle and keep up with the Joneses.
Brian is planning on posting something that he sent to me on the johnmoore.com website. It's called Charitable Giving in the Wake of COVID-19. Lots of great information on it. We'll keep you up to date when that's available. Brian will be on the show every Friday. Sometimes he's here for 10 minutes just giving us an update. Today he's been with us for the full hour. Brian, I kind of have an unusual, maybe even a perspective here, but I have a listener who has sent me kind of a story, not a question, and they wanted to frame it as a question. And what they did is this. They went to a local restaurant that they really wanted to stay in business, and they bought $1,000 worth of, I don't want to say coupons, but like cards, so that you could,
cards.
And that way they could have meals, you know, not use them, but they wanted to give the restaurant the money now and then be able to use the gift cards in the future as they move forward. the question I have is, will those kinds of special giving and those kind of things affect people in their general giving?
Are you saying from a perspective of the fact they
I guess for the
restaurant, do they have enough to give to other organizations?
Yeah, I guess I'm reading in the survey that special contributions and special things that people are doing, like food drives and other things, the survey seems to indicate it's not going likely to affect year-end giving and the normal giving that people have, and that's an amazing thing.
Yeah, I think, it's like I said before, I think a lot of people are finding room in their budget because they're not spending in other places. They're finding room in their expenses for these other projects. And you and I talked about this a few months ago when the federal government was preparing to give this $1,200 lump sum to Americans who meet the income requirements. And we talked about if you didn't need that money to get through this period, if you had other sources of income through earnings or pension, or you know, you didn't have financial insecurity, that one of the best things you could do is turn around and give that money to organizations that are helping people in need. And I think that's what's happening. You know, that's what I continue to see with our clients, is they're able to keep up their normal giving to their church and the other organizations and then step up above and beyond that. And I think that's the challenge. You know, one thing we're cautious of with our clients is we kind of keep an eye out for what my partner John Moore has always called tickle tithers. People who give 10% and they treat it like a speed limit, where that's all they give. They feel like they've checked the box when they give 10%. That's not biblical generosity. Biblical generosity is you're giving as you feel the call and the need to give, and you're giving in proportion to how you've been blessed. So rather than just stopping at 10%, I think a lot of these people are going above and beyond and exhibiting true generosity. They're seeing the need, and they're blessing people around them. And I love the gift card idea, because that's just a great creativity and helping specifically people who need it with those restaurant owners. So I love to see that, and I think that's a better example of biblical generosity than just sticking to your 10% and saying, I'm generous. I've fulfilled my obligation with my 10%.
Brian, here's another email. And it's basically framing the question, I have a friend who I know has some financial needs. How would I approach them about giving them some money? Not loaning it, but giving it to them.
Yeah, there's a few ways you could do that. We have a lot of our clients and people I've met over the years, when we get to the generosity conversations, they share just this, that they're not giving to 501c3s as much as they're just supporting people in need. So one way is just to be very upfront and say, I'd like to be a blessing to you. Is there anywhere in particular I could help you? And we've had some people who, when they want to help somebody who maybe isn't responsible with money, we basically have them sit down and just write checks out to specific bills that are outstanding, a credit card bill or a student loan payment. So they'll write and actually make a payment to that organization on behalf of the person, as opposed to just giving them a check. But that's a good way to do it, is figure out where their needs are. The other thing you can do is simply show up. Don't make them ask for it. Don't make them be specific. So the other end of that spectrum is simply show up. If you know that things are tight, show up, call them and say, hey, I'm 20 minutes away. I'm going to pick up some pizzas for you. What's your order? And just bring them that meal and be a blessing to them and spend the time with them to sit down and share that meal and give it to them. So if you have an idea where their need is, you can just be very direct. And don't make them confirm or ask for it, because people are often too humble for that. But simply meet them where you know the need already is, if you can.
Mm. Brian, what's going on fun for the Cochran family? You got the kids going outdoors this weekend?
Yeah, we're going to get out. We always try to get out of the house, and they're like puppies, you know. They only behave if you go wear them out. So we go out and run around and exercise. So I'm going to try to get these guys burned out so they don't drive me and their mom crazy this week. So.
Well, it is always a pleasure to spend time with you, Brian. We so much appreciate all that you do for us here on ABQ Connect. So thank you so much for joining us today.
You have a great weekend, Jim. Thanks.
And we'll see you next Friday for a 10-minute update.
You bet, sir.
All right. Well, you have been generous to spend the week with us here at ABQ Connect. We appreciate our listeners so much. And again, I want to say, you know, we reach out to Central New Mexico, and there's people in communities all over that are participating. And we actually have people all over the world now listening to abqconnect.online. So if you missed any of today's show, please go to abqconnect.online, and you'll be able to listen to Brian's comments today and what he's done for us each week. Have a great weekend.
Presented by Bosky Heating and Cooling. For service, call 504-444-7200. Bosky Heating and Cooling. Locally grown, locally owned. ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at abqconnect.online.